Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing today? We've got a full week of games under our belt to talk about.
I know. We got to this point. It seemed like we spent months and months and months, because we did, talking about the start of college football, and now we've actually have it. So we've got plenty to talk about. And there was, you know, for as bad as we thought the week one slate was, Jim, there's still some plenty of things to discuss, some interesting outcomes and controversial situations that unfolded in week one.
Oh, really? I was kind of busy covering the Penn State Marshall game, so did something happen that I missed, Dustin?
Yeah. Give me just one second, Jim, and I'll tell you.
Got to look up to see if there was anything good.
Yeah, I just need an extra second here to try to find if anything happened here. Just one second. We'll be fine.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to take, while you're taking a look, we're going to start in the obvious place if we're talking about the Big Ten, even if we're talking about all of college football. I want to start with this. Obviously, we're referring to Michigan's 13-12 win over Western Michigan. Sure, it took them an extra second of game time to do it, but a win's a win. And I think Kyle Whittingham agrees. I just read this quote from him today. "I think everyone is satisfied with the result." So, Dustin, are you satisfied with the result?
No.
Whittingham thinks you are.
Yeah, he doesn't speak for me. I think everybody in Ann Arbor is satisfied with the result. I mean, I could not believe, A, what happened, B, the Big Ten's response to it. So for those who may have been under a rock, Michigan trailed Western Michigan 12-7. Bryce Underwood launches a pass to the back of the end zone. It goes out of bounds. Nobody touches it until the clock has expired. It goes upon review, as is the case in most of those situations. You want to double check the clock. That wasn't out of the ordinary. But everybody who was everybody thought, oh, well, that's easy. Game over. One touched until zero. When you slow it down, you could clearly see there was space between his outstretched arms and the football. Nope, we get one more second left. Michigan gets one more play. And then they connect. J.J. Buchanan hauls in a 45-yard touchdown pass. Michigan wins the game 13-12. There's been a lot of controversial calls in the history of college football. There's no question about it. This was the most egregious. And then for the Big Ten to basically say, I'm not reading their statement. If you have it and you want to, great. But it basically said, we have our own clock that nobody else can see except us. Jim, and my concern is, in this world of gambling, in sports betting, and you have a situation where Michigan gets an extra play, basically, in my opinion, because the Big Ten says, yeah, let's give them one more try. There's no justification. You can't convince me that there's extra time on a secret clock somewhere hidden in Ann Arbor or wherever they have the Big Ten replay studio, maybe Chicago, whatever, that there any of those showed extra time. So then you have a bit of a scandal on your hands, right? And the thing that bothers me, Jim, if this would have been 15 of the 18 Big Ten schools, they're not getting another play. If this would have been reversed where Western Michigan was the one throwing the pass, they weren't going to get an extra play. Because it's Michigan and because they're one of the traditional, you know, back in the old days, even before Penn State joined, it was referred to as the Big Eight or the Big Two and the Little Eight. That's how the Big Ten was referred. And I think that that was pretty much on full display on set. Like, there is no explanation you can give me that I'm going to be satisfied with, to quote Kyle Whittingham.
Well, a few things with that. Yes, starting with the super secret clock that's out there. Obviously, it's a Michigan clock, okay? Because it can't be. Everybody else in the world had a clock that said all zeros. The other thing that got me, well, a couple things. They started talking about a fractions of a second. That, gee, when it flips from 1 second to zero, that could actually mean 9/10 or 8/10 of a second still left. Okay, this is not the NBA. Have you ever heard of fractions of a second on a clock?
Not in football.
No. And the fact that they said as soon as that defender touches the ball because he started from out of bounds, the clock should stop. First of all, it's a distraction because it's irrelevant. The clock went to zero before he touched it. So this trying to use that as the way to legitimize the call is so bogus in my mind. You know, it's irrelevant. But they wanted to do that. It just confuses the situation. This different clock that they're using, where is that clock? How is it that we've never heard of that clock before? And then you hit, I think, the most relevant question. If the roles were reversed, is there any way in the world Western Michigan would have gotten an additional play? I think we all know what the answer to that question is, Dustin.
Yeah, it's no, they would not have. And here's this is the other thing. So, and I think that Dan Orlovsky, who, I mean, take it or leave it, I'm not his biggest fan, I'm not his biggest critic, mentioned it's 2026 and we can't get clocks that are synced up. Like, we don't have that technology that we're every single clock. Jim, I used to cover high school basketball games in rural, I cannot say rural to save my life. So, in the country version of Indiana, where I grew up, where the scoreboards were probably made in the 80s, I would guess. And the clock had what would be the right, it didn't have the tenths of a second. So you could actually have all zeros on the clock, but until the horn sounded.
Correct, yes.
I have a feeling that the, I don't know, $10 million scoreboard inside Michigan Stadium probably doesn't have that issue, where it's probably synced up to where there's still 1 second on the clock until it gets down to 0.1, and then when it goes to 0.0, it goes zero across the scoreboard. Can't imagine. And here's the other thing that bothers me too. And there may have been other coaches that were asked this. I don't follow other teams in terms of their weekly press conferences anymore. I used to, but Barry Odom was asked, like, did you know that the clock inside Ross Aid was not the official clock? And he said, not until Saturday night. So you have a magical clock that nobody else knows about. Like if he would have said, yeah, actually we do know that the Big Ten, there is an official scoreboard that's pretty close to the right time, but it may not be exact. Like if he would have said something like that, I would have been like, okay, at least the coaches know about this. Nope. The coaches don't even know about it. So the Big Ten it just reeks of corruption. Like, I don't know how else to phrase that. It's just, you didn't want to have another embarrassing night and you wanted, and I don't even understand the point of this, Jim. Michigan's going to be Michigan no matter if they win or lose. Like, they're going to bring in money. So why do you care if they win or they're not going to go to the playoff? That should be quite evident in the way they played the entire 60 minutes. Let's throw out the extra 1 second that they got. It just makes no sense. And you can't, again, I'm going to just sound like a broken record. You can't give me any angle. You can't give me any, because now all the stuff with AI and the way you can dock video and stuff, you can make that read however you want it to read. They didn't come out with a statement till 2 hours after the fact. It wasn't like an immediate response. That may have been like, oh, hey, by the way, this is what happened. We're on top of it. Again, maybe you get some grace there. I don't think so. But at least if you had to wait 2 hours to come up with your story, what? It just doesn't add up.
You know, the thing of it is, too, a couple things. as you pointed out, it had always been known as the Big Two, Little Eight. And as many older Penn State fans will know, Penn State was treated like the redheaded stepchild when they entered the Big Ten. I can't believe it's now 30 years since they joined. And nobody was happy of the football coaches, the athletic directors. It was the presidents who wanted them in. Anyway, Penn State has, and it sounds like a homer call, but they've been jobbed so many times. This is not the first time Michigan had seconds added to the clock to win a game. Did you know that?
I don't think I did know that.
It happened against Penn State. They actually got 2 seconds added to the clock and won the last one. And it was a year where that was the only loss for Penn State that season. It took away an undefeated season and a shot at a national championship even. And it there were so many times, and I think at one time I sent you, you know, there's Ohio State, a player catching a pass on the bounce, okay? And it was obvious. But, oh, instant replay isn't working right now. Things like that. Ohio State kicking a field goal, you know, 3 or 4 seconds after the play clock has finished, okay? Things like that over and over again. The foot heel inbound out of bounds call goes Michigan's way.
Yeah.
Those kind of things have happened to Penn State. And I mentioned, I think I sent you one where Penn State got called for offsides on a kickoff. And now, that happens a lot, by the way, where guys are like one step. And it's very seldom called unless it's egregious. Every player was a full step behind the line when the ball was kicked and they were called. I mean, those are the things that happen. And I don't mean to turn this into a Penn State spitting contest, but those are the things that happen that give the at least the appearance of impropriety, whether it is or not. So when Michigan has a home game and they get to do the replay and they get to come up with their own clock, whether it's legitimate or not, it sure looks really bad. It reflects so poorly on Michigan and the conference. And if there's justice in the world, when we come back, I'm going to tell you what should be justice in the world. We'll do that right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel. The first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. We've been talking about this Michigan-Western Michigan fiasco from the other night. And when we left us, and I was saying, if there's actually karma in the world, this is what's going to happen. Michigan ends up going 10-2, something to that effect. I don't think it'll happen, but it does. And it's kind of like, oh, how do you break this tie to make the playoffs? I think the College Football Playoff Committee will hold this against them. Maybe it doesn't count as a whole loss, but at the very least, it'll count as a half a loss, if you know what I mean. And somebody else will get the advantage over them. And you just know Michigan people will go crazy complaining about it. And the other part to this is, you talked about this as a reflection on the Big Ten. I think that's exactly accurate. If you're the Big Ten, it's this even appearance of corruption that they will suffer from, because the fact is, I don't know why they're trying to save Michigan. This is not a good Michigan team if they have to deal with. Maybe I'm overreacting to week one, and we'll find out more when they play Oklahoma. But, and you brought up the other thing this weekend where, you know, they were trying to take advantage of Nebraska's volleyball popularity, put it at a match at Wrigley Field, and because of humidity, the court started getting slick. And there was nothing worse than trying to have athletes play on that kind of surface that could get wet. Yeah. And they had to cancel it.
Yeah. I mean, just all around, like they, and like I told you, like there were some popular volleyball programs there, but if there were 40,000 people there, 38 to 39,000 of them were probably Nebraska fans, and they played a total of 19 points. So all those people had to book flights, book hotels, pay for gas. None of that stuff's cheap. And they don't get to see their favorite team play. So just to cut it, just like a 2-day period of just complete embarrassment. And I did want to say this too, when you go back to the football game, and I'm not going to say who, but because I don't remember if it was on or off the record. So I'm just covering just my bases.
Put it out there.
But there's a Big Ten coach who has told a group of us based on a loss several years ago, ironically to Michigan, that he was told when he was first coming up, was like, the Big Ten doesn't let you be good until you've been good for 2 or 3 years. And I think that that's a little bit of kind of what, I know Western Michigan is not in the Big Ten, but I think that a little bit of that was at play as well. You got to be good for, you know, if maybe, and maybe Jim, if that had been Oklahoma, maybe they don't get an extra play. Maybe Michigan doesn't get that extra play, but because it's Western Michigan and because it's the MAC and because they don't have a huge following, I think we all know that they got hosed big time. And I agree with you. It's Michigan's not going to win 10 games. And if they do, dear God. But I thought the same thing. I was like, the AP voters, the coaches poll, College Football Playoff should hold this against them. Treat them as if they're 0-1. And guess what? If Western Michigan gets to the end of the season, because we don't know how good Western Michigan is, if they're 11-1, treat them like they're 12-0. Put them in the playoff. Yep. They didn't get that loss.
Yep, I agree. The rest of the world, you know, despite what Kyle Whittingham says, not everyone is satisfied with this result. And the other thing that the Michigan folks and Big Ten folks keep putting out there is, well, Western Michigan in the MAC seems to be fine with it. Well, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
They can't like you mentioned Oklahoma. Oklahoma has the gravitas to fight it. They could have the Southeast Conference backing them, and that's a fair fight. The MAC Conference fight battling with the Big Ten, not a fair fight. Not a fair fight at all. And in fact, the MAC, a lot of people are saying, oh, probably the Big Ten is paying them off. No, there's not an extra payday for it. But what there is this, the subtle, probably unspoken threat. You know, you MAC teams, you get your million-dollar paychecks for coming to visit a Big Ten stadium and get slaughtered, but you're doing it for the million-dollar paycheck. Hey, there's a lot of other teams out there that would love the million-dollar payday. We could cut you off just like that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure no one at the Big Ten office ever said anything to that effect. But, but it doesn't need to be spoken. We all know that it exists. And the MAC, for their financial well-being, they can't jeopardize that, Dustin.
No, I agree. I think that you, it's one of those situations where they, the Big Ten holds the big stick in this. You just hope, like I said, it would be fascinating to me because I think if you get to a situation, and I'm not going to try to pretend like I know Western Michigan football, but if they get to a point, they've got Boise State on the schedule, which is as we saw against Oregon, was a really good football team. Jim, if they get to 11-1, they're going to petition. Like they're going to say, hey, you like, we won that game. They gifted him an extra second. That's what's going to be fascinating. I'm sure now Western Michigan's going to lose their next four games and it becomes a moot point. But point being is that there's a situation where Western Michigan may be fine for it for now, but if you get to November and they're 9-1, 10-1, knocking on the door of a playoff, and it comes down between them and another group of five team, you say, hey, we beat Michigan on the road in Ann Arbor. We played well for 60 minutes. We just didn't play well for 60 minutes in a second.
And, you know, perhaps this is me looking for a silver lining that doesn't really exist, but I think those players at Western Michigan and the program itself will benefit from this and all of the good ink that they're going to get and support they're going to get. And Michigan is going to suffer from this one way or another. You know, they will be a pariah in college football if they weren't already. Kind of like Texas Tech with their, you know, the situation. Even though it ended up, they're not going to suit up Sorsby.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Texas Tech is the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Now add Michigan to that list, is my opinion. So
Texas Tech, Michigan, and LSU, the three-headed monster.
Exactly. The only difference is Lane Kiffin could win. So, as Clemson found out. Let's hit one more embarrassment in the Big Ten. Why not? Okay, as long as we're going down this path. How about those Rutgers Scarlet Knights? And, you know, perhaps the funniest line that occurred during this game. I was not aware this was happening, that Rutgers was losing. And out of nowhere, I get a text from my buddy Dustin, who says, maybe, just maybe, his Purdue Boilermakers are not the worst team in the conference.
Yeah.
Boy, that was ugly performance for Rutgers.
Yeah. That seems to me, we'll see how the rest of this goes. I can't imagine it's going to be positive, but this might be the marking of the end of the Greg Schiano era. Because here's the thing. This UMass had lost, what, 16 straight games? Something like that.
They hadn't won in almost 2 years.
Yeah. So, and certainly we've seen how things can change via the transfer portal, right? So here, but to me, if UMass wins that game 22-21, I think you think about this a lot different. The fact that they looked like the Big Ten team in that game. It wasn't like this was, you know, a squeaker. Hey, UMass, Joe, whose last name I can't pronounce, Hurusmiak or whatever, has really turned it around. He's done a really nice job. He knew Rutgers because he used to be on Greg Schiano's staff. You know, sometimes those things happen. But you can't lose by 16 points in that situation on your home field on opening. Like, they just look really bad, Jim. And the thing to me that's most troubling in this situation is, and I know every coach says it, but you just had Big Ten Media Days where Greg Schiano says, we've got more resources and more money than we've ever had at Rutgers. We feel like we're headed in the right direction. Oops. So to me, that just compiles, like, the fact that he thought that they were in such a good spot and then you get crushed. Like, it was never even a game. So they're in trouble.
The final was 37-21, and the game was not nearly that close.
Correct.
And what it also is an example of is you got to have a quarterback, okay? And if you have an awful quarterback, and by the way, Bryce Underwood says hello. he was terrible.
Yeah.
So Rutgers obviously doesn't have a quarterback, and that's how these things happen. It was an embarrassment, and as you put it, Greg Schiano says, hey, now is our time. We're all aligned, remember?
Yeah.
All the way up and down. To me, what struck me funny is I was listening to Neuheisel on the radio the next day, and he talked about it. If you're Greg Schiano right now, you are, and in my head, I'm finishing his sentence for him, updating your resume.
Yeah.
And he said, you've got your coaches together and you're meeting on how to identify the problems and fix it. I can't imagine there is a fix for this at Rutgers for Greg Schiano. I think he coached his last meaningful game at Rutgers.
I mean, they might wait until the end of the season. I don't know. And I don't know what his buyout is, but Jim, they've got Howard, and that may be the only game they win. They play at Boston College, USC, Howard, which I hope they win, Indiana, Maryland, Northwestern, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Penn State, Michigan State. Before the season started, we probably would have said, I bet Rutgers is a bowl team. With that schedule, not now.
I'll give you one last funny one, and you'll enjoy. So that game was, Thursday night, I believe?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. My Friday show, we record Thursday, and we get people who send in questions. And someone sent in a question giving their hot take, whatever. And one of their hot takes was, Rutgers will beat USC.
Oh, boy.
And there was some – and the terrible thing is we recorded that before the game happened, Rutgers losing in embarrassing fashion. And that did not age well. But it's also, though, I think I understood why he said that. Rutgers plays ugly. They make you play ugly. USC is traveling across the country. Gee, you know, I don't think it'll happen, but I could certainly see it. Not anymore. All right, Dustin, there were a few other games going on in the Big Ten. We're going to talk about them when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. Dustin, we spent enough time on Michigan and even on Rutgers. There were a few more games played. Let's go through the Big Ten and what's going on. At the very top, and you and I have talked about this, I hate these terrible mismatches, but Ohio State playing Ball State, Indiana playing North Texas, 56-3, 52-16. Do those games do anything but allow some of the backups to get on the field for some downs?
No, but the only thing is I'll tell you, now, not so much the Ohio State game, but North Texas did give Indiana some trouble through 2.5 quarters of that game. Now, last year, Old Dominion was within 2 touchdowns at Indiana, so I wouldn't read too much into it. But, I don't think you really take anything away from those games, especially like the IU game. The field temperature was 150 degrees, so how much did that impact? North Texas probably a little bit more well-equipped to handle that than Bloomington, Indiana. But, yeah, I don't think we learned anything from those two games.
No, we know those are two really good teams. Speaking of, Indiana having a tough game early and it didn't matter, Oregon a couple years ago had a close one with Boise State. And I remember Boise State ended up making the playoffs, and everyone said, oh, they don't belong there. Heck, they took, Oregon to the finish line. And I don't know if it's just some – and by the way, Oregon, I think they advanced very far. They made the playoffs, won the Big Ten, all of those things. So it wasn't an indication. Well, here we go, deja vu all over again. Boise State giving Oregon a game in Oregon. I guess it's 34-27. Oregon squeaks by with the win. You take anything from that one, or is this just, hey, it happens?
The thing that we took away from it a couple years ago was that Oregon's offensive line was not quite ready in that week one game, and I think they had a bunch of transfers. And so they were still kind of developing that chemistry. The thing that I take from this was, and I, I don't know that it's concerning, Jim, because, again, we've seen this before. Like I said, Indiana last year beat Old Dominion 27-14 and end up beating the hell out of everybody else they played except Penn State and won a national championship. The one thing that I think is if you want to say it's concerning, Oregon 10 penalties, 90 yards. They doubled up Boise State in terms of offensive production and didn't really do it. I mean, they still scored 34 points, but Boise State was able to hang around and was in the lead for at least the first half of that game and hung around obviously the entire way. So this is kind of just what Oregon does early in the season, I think. So I'm not super worried about it. I just would say that they've got to figure out some things in terms of their penalties, and they've got to get better on third down. But the other part of this is, especially now with the transfer portal, we don't know how good Boise State is. This, like you said, this could be a team that goes 10-2, 11-1, really good football team, or it could be a 6-6 team. We just don't know.
And Boise State traditionally, I looked at that game going into the week, saying, "Hey, that might be an interesting matchup." And then I saw the spread, and I think Oregon was like a 3-touchdown favorite. It was 20-some points. And I'm like, oh, okay. Candidly, I don't know Boise State very well. Well, apparently they might still be the Boise State that we've always known. So that'll be interesting to watch. I don't think Oregon did well running the ball. So it will be interesting to see going forward. A few teams pitched shutouts. Maryland, 62-0 over Hampton.
Typical September Maryland, Jim. The one time you don't want to play Maryland is in September. Once you get to October, you're fine.
I think it might have something to do with being Hampton.
No, don't take this away from my clock.
But really, that's the kind of game. Please don't schedule those. Some other teams pitch shutouts. Iowa, 40-0 over Northern Illinois. Yes, Dustin.
I know.
Iowa scored 40 points in one game.
I know. And for all of the – and again, I feel like I have to preface everything with, we don't know anything about Northern Illinois, but they played three quarterbacks and I don't know that they – see, I'm not as convinced that Iowa's offense is as good as what we saw. I think Northern Illinois might be bad. I mean, Kamari Moulton rushed for 183 yards on 11 carries. Jim, that's pretty good. But I'm not buying the Iowa quarterback stock just yet. I think we'll find out a little bit more, obviously, next week against Iowa State. But then – I think they'll probably be 4-0, 1, 2, 3, 4, probably be 4-0 heading into that Ohio State game, which is when we'll discover if Iowa's for real or not.
And they'll put up 3 points or 5 points in that game. The defense might get them a safety.
I was going to say the traditional safety, yeah.
USC shut out Fresno State 39-0. Again, we're not going to know about USC until September 26th when they play Oregon.
Yeah. Yep, I agree.
Penn State 45-0 over Marshall. Obviously, I was there. We saw from the Penn State standpoint, again, they were a 3-touchdown favorite over Marshall. Just my quick take on it. They played a clean game, which we haven't really seen in the last couple of years in these out-of-conference games. They would win the games. They would blow people out. But you watch them and go, hey, boy, I hope they clean up some of those things.
Shocking, Jim.
Yeah. You didn't walk away from this game thinking they had anything that they needed to clean up.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask you because you're the expert here. So I did not watch Penn State, so I'm just – referring to the highlights and stats here. So bear with me. Rocco Becht, probably true or false best quarterback since Trace McSorley.
The way he looked, yes.
I know it's against Marshall, but I don't know from what very little I saw, efficient, looked like he belonged in a Penn State uniform, if that makes sense. Kind of the quarterback that I that I think that Penn State has wanted for a while, but just, I don't know. Drew Aller looks the part, but he was not, maybe didn't live up to the expectations.
Yeah, Drew Aller, it was like Pete Alonso in baseball. So much power, could hit the home run. Yeah. But boy, you know, is he the guy you want up when all, you know, you have a runner on third base with less than two outs and you need right. that one run.
Yeah.
Rocco Beck will get the run home. He, for those who don't know baseball, never mind. But he, and I've used this wording a lot, I think his floor is high, although he may have sure. a ceiling. He showed that he's that veteran quarterback. And what a lot of folks point to as kind of the play of the game, or, you know, when it's 45-0, there is no play of the game. But a broken play. He bought some time. His intended receiver fell down. Kobe Howard, play's basically over. He broke for a open area, ends up Rocco Beck finds him, long touchdown. It showed the calmness, cool in the back in the pocket for a vet from a veteran quarterback. That's what he brings to the table, and that's what we saw. Moving on to a couple other games in the conference, I thought UCLA. They had again Cal, not necessarily a great team. But they're from a Power Four conference. I give them credit, first of all, for scheduling a Power Four team. And, hey, Bob Chesney, they put up 45 points.
And they look like they can run the football. 277 yards, 6 touchdowns on the ground, I think. I'm not, and that wasn't like a lot of Nico scrambling. That was designed runs. So I think that can be an identity. Whether or not they're able to hang with teams like Oregon, USC, I don't know. But I think that this, there's no question this is a UCLA team that is going to win some games. And running the football seems to be a heavy point of emphasis. So that was, as you mentioned, Cal not the best Power Four team. But to do that in week one against a Power Four team, there were Big Ten teams outside of Michigan that struggled with MAC teams. So the fact that they were able to do that against Cal, I think just shows the kind of improvement. I don't know that, you know, Nico was okay, 14-22, an interception. But UCLA, a pretty impressive first showing for Bob Chesney. I think that they're going to be one of those teams that you just don't want to play this season.
I think so too. And again, that doesn't mean they're going to win the conference contend, right. But I think they've definitely upped their game. Kind of an interesting game was Washington State, 24-10. That was a 17-10 game late. It was 17-10. Washington had the ball in their own territory. They had third and long. Pocket collapses. DeMond Williams has to scramble. They've got him trapped. They're going to make the play. Whoops. DeMond Williams, he made the play. He had no right to make the play. Made multiple people miss, gets the first down, scores a touchdown later. I don't know if Washington is happy with their performance, but DeMond Williams is a difference maker.
So here's the thing to me. If you force 3 turnovers and you – like I thought Washington was good, and maybe they still are, but I thought Washington would be a top – team in terms of a dark horse contender for the playoff, you force 3 turnovers and you only win by 14 points against a Washington State team that what was like 2-10 last year, something like that. Ugly, undisciplined, 130 yards in penalties. There's no part of me that thinks that Jed Fish would be happy with this performance. So yeah. You just hope that it's a week one type of situation and you can improve and move on. Again, rivalry game week one, who knows, but that's, to have that many penalty yards, Jim, in week one is concerning.
And as I said, the other part of it, it was 17-10, 3 minutes to go. Washington backed up 3rd and 9. Boy, you needed a special quarterback to make a special play, or else you would have had Washington State possessing the ball and could have forced overtime. That's it for quarter number three. One more to go. Stick with us.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We were looking at the games from last week. We'll preview this coming weekend in the Big Ten. Before we get there, just a couple other games of note. Nebraska, they struggled early before beating Ohio 49-21. Again, first game. Anything to be concerned about there with Nebraska?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think they're going to be just about what we think they're going to be.
And Michigan State struggled a bit with Toledo. Pat Fitzgerald, first game with Michigan State, they escaped 30-20. I got a feeling this is still going to be the Michigan State we've known for the last few years, Dustin.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a major work in progress. And that was the big question coming in. Is this the Pat Fitzgerald that, you know, would consistently win 7-9 games at Northwestern and be a team that you really didn't want to play? Or is this going to be the one that we saw the last 3 or 4 years where they were consistently at the bottom of the Big Ten? So not a great first showing. And I think this is going to be a work in progress. I think Michigan State's still going to be at the bottom of the Big Ten.
Yeah, I'm always concerned with these guys who – I know it was forced retirement, but that still coming out for from retirement to come back, those always concern me. Your Purdue Boilermakers playing an FCS team struggled early. Dustin threatened to jump out of the press box, but
still here.
Your team ended up putting up 44.
Yeah, a much better third quarter. Looked like they to me, and I people don't want to go too deep into this, but tried to get too cute offensively in the first half, didn't work. I think they just played football in the second half much better. Still some concerns about their secondary. We're going to find out a lot about Purdue week two when they play Wake Forest.
Well, let's use that as our segue into some of next week's games. Purdue plays Wake Forest, and I'm happy for that game on the schedule. To me, that's the kind of game we ought to see more often. Mm-hmm. When, you know, Indiana, Penn State, they're not playing any Power Four teams. For Purdue, it's a good test for them. Find out where they're at. Wake Forest may not be the best team in the ACC, but they're still an ACC team, Dustin.
And they won 9 games a year ago. They got a mobile quarterback in Gio Lopez. They've got a pretty good run game. Purdue's secondary was not good. And Wake Forest can throw the ball. So yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. We're already labeling it the most important game of the Barry Odom era, so that should tell you something. But yeah, I like these games. You don't have to have, you know, Purdue doesn't have to play like Texas or Alabama or something, but just play a comparable ACC, SEC, Big 12 opponent, someone like that to kind of gauge where you are. So This is an important game, and I know that people in State College don't care about Purdue, Wake Forest, but you know, in terms of where Purdue stands, I think that it's a pretty critical game for Purdue to start off the season.
And as we said, that's the kind of game we ought to have more of those. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned Texas. Let's talk about the big one, the one that really matters. It's Ohio State, Texas. Both teams with national championship aspirations. I give lots of credit to both these teams for scheduling this game. And I know that there's always those discussions about how much should strength of schedule be part of the conversation. This is one, like last year, it was a one-score game. I think if you keep this game close, it won't be held against the loser of this game.
No, I don't think so either. And if Texas doesn't lose to 4-8 Florida, they're in the playoff last year, even though they lost to Ohio State. So this is a situation where I don't know that we completely disagree, Jim, but like Ohio State playing Ball State week one, Texas playing Texas State week one, I give those teams both a pass because they were willing to schedule this game. So even though it's not entertaining, you do have to kind of work out, you know, some of the kinks. You have to make sure your team's ready for a big time top five matchup this week. This is going to be interesting. I think too much was put on Arch Manning last year, you know, unwarranted. And now this year, I think it's time for him to deliver. Doesn't mean he has to win the game, but he didn't play particularly well last season. How does Ohio State handle going on the road so early in the year? They're going to be playing in that Texas heat. Really, really going to be an interesting, fun matchup on Saturday night down in Austin.
Oh, it definitely will be. And what I like about this game, the quarterbacks are good. We got top receivers on both sides. These are the very best players in the country going at it here. And this is the game. And what I don't like is, and you'll hear the announcers talk about, oh, this will have playoff implications. Forget that. Yeah. Forget that. How about we just see two really good teams playing a college football game?
Correct. And this is kind of what bothers me. And I understand the narrative, but whoever wins this game is automatically like in the driver's seat to win the national championship. And that's all you're going to talk about. We still got 10 games after this week to see what these two teams can do. So it's a really good matchup. I like each game individually for the game of college football. So just sit back. Don't worry about the playoff implications. Don't worry about the national championship favorite. Just sit down at your TV for 3 hours and enjoy two of the better teams in college football going head-to-head this early in the season.
And, you know, I mentioned that besides the obvious quarterbacks, you got some really good wide receivers. Jeremiah Smith, of course. Texas has Cam Coleman. Just as an aside, did you watch any of Miami? Derek Menza, quarterback. Malachi Toney for Miami. He's legit.
Is he?
Stanford okay. Doesn't play defense, but still, you know, very impressive. I think there's a lot of great wide receivers in the country this year. The other big game, Michigan, Oklahoma. Can Michigan, that first game, we've seen it where teams have just really laid an egg in the first game, escaped. I don't recall anyone escaping like Michigan did, but yeah. We've seen teams really lay an egg in that first game and come back and be a very good team. Can Michigan come back from that? What are you looking for from them in Oklahoma?
Yeah, the first thing I'll look at, Jim, is honestly to see if the scoreboard said 60-01 to start kickoff or how that's going to work. Michigan couldn't move the football, Jim. And I don't know how against a team of the caliber of Oklahoma, Brent Venables, who typically has some pretty good defenses. I don't see it. Bryce Underwood is not worth, I'd hate to say that about a kid, but to me, I don't know what his paycheck is. It's in the millions from what I understand. Has he looked like that kind of player to you? He hasn't to me. So I don't think so. I don't know that Oklahoma is going to blow out Michigan because I do think that Michigan, from a talent perspective, probably has enough there to keep it somewhat respectable. But this to me, and I don't remember if it was, I think it was 2024. You remember when Texas went in and I don't remember what the score was, but I feel like it was like 31-12 or something like that. I think that that's what's going to happen. It's not going to be where Oklahoma just puts up 50 points and Michigan never has a chance. But I think Oklahoma is going to go up by a few touchdowns and Michigan will still be quote unquote in the game, but you never really feel like they're going to win the game. if that makes sense. I think Oklahoma is going to completely control this game from the opening kickoff.
Yeah, I think Michigan will look at the game tape, fix a lot of things, but they didn't lose that game or win the game close the way they did as a fluke. It wasn't, we had tip passes that were intercepted, pick sixes, things like that. They were not the better team in that first game. So it's hard to imagine them coming back. So I hear you taking Oklahoma. I didn't ask you that Ohio State-Texas game. Care to make a call?
So this is – I always kind of revert to this. In games where the teams are evenly matched, the best player usually makes the difference, and I think Ohio State has the best player. So I think I'm going to go with Ohio State. I don't know what this line is in that. I would guess Ohio State by like 3.5 maybe.
I don't have it in front of me, but I thought I remember
Jim,
seeing.
Come on.
All things. That's what, you know, yes, you should count on me for that. I think it was actually Texas favored because they're the home team. Now, I think it was like only 1 or 2 points. So neutral field,
basically
you might actually, yeah. I'm with you though. I often do this. I often default to Ohio State because I think they typically are the more talented team. And you can't say that against a team playing Texas very often. But I think they might have the better quarterback. They definitely have the best player on the field with Jeremiah Smith. I just think that guy is phenomenal. And I know I'm going off the tracks a little bit, but I think this season quickly already, I'm seeing multiple teams that can win the national championship. Ohio State and Texas are two of them. I think LSU planted their flag there against Clemson. They didn't just win. They embarrassed Clemson. And if you saw Miami play, you got to say that might be the most talented team in the country.
Yeah. And I mean, you look there too. You've got Notre Dame who clobbered Wisconsin,
yes,
which I know Wisconsin isn't great, but Georgia's still going to be a contender. There was another team. Oh, Ole Miss getting a good win against a quality Louisville opponent in week one. So I think you got to put, you know, I think you got to put them in the mix too. So yeah, I agree with you. I think there's a lot of teams that right now, and this is what we like about the 12 team playoff. You feel like all you got to do is get into that format. And if you can, there's a lot of teams that can make a run. And I think now it's only been 1 week, you know, maybe to an extent it's been 2 weeks, but I think that through 1 week, yeah, you look at this and there's a lot of quality teams out there that could potentially make a run. And with so many high quality matchups in week two, maybe we start to see a little bit of that separation between the cans and cannots.
Yeah. I missed the Wisconsin Notre Dame game. That was my oversight, but yeah, Notre Dame looks the part. We know Ohio State and Indiana. We know Texas. Yep. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of good teams. All right, Dustin, that's it for the show. Thank you. Thank all of you for joining us. Come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first-of-its-kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent. Led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students, it's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.